This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest is the satirist Al Franken. He spent 8 days in December on a USO tour, entertaining the troops in Iraq, Afghanistan, Kuwait, and Uzbekistan. He performed in Tikrit just a few days after Saddam Hussein was captured. Franken returned home to New York City on Christmas Eve. He was a longtime writer and cast member of Saturday Night Live. Franken's latest book is the bestseller Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, A Fair and Balanced Look at the Right. Al Franken, welcome back to Fresh Air. Some people be surprised that you do these USO tours because you don't support the war in Iraq and you don't support the Bush administration. So what would you say to the people who are surprised that you're doing it?
Well, it's not that I don't support the war in Iraq. I mean, we're there now, so I certainly support our troops that are there, and I certainly support the mission that we've been backed into, which is to make Iraq secure enough to become as Western style a democracy as it can be. I mean, that's what we have to do now. So it's not that I, you know, want us to leave. I've done 4 USO tours in the last 5 years, and I love doing them, and I love our troops. And the sort of the idea that patriotism is something that Republicans and conservatives can wrap themselves in and belongs only to them is something I reject. And also, by the way, it's a lot of fun, and it's very moving, and I really feel like it's something I can do. I did not serve in the military. When I was of draft age, I was in college, and the government felt that it was better for me to complete my education to prepare me for my chosen profession, comedian, than to actually go to war in Vietnam.
So does the State Department have any reservations about taking you on USO tours since you're so outspoken against President Bush?
I don't know if they get wind of it, the State Department. I know the Pentagon did. And you see, the USO is kind of separate from the Pentagon, and they know me there. And as I said, I've done 3 of these before, including while Bush was president, as we were starting Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan, which I did support. And they know me. I mean, I don't do Daryl Worley, who is a terrific country singer who had a very big hit with Have You Forgotten, which is a sort of fairly jingoistic song about the war, justifying our war in Afghanistan, which I don't know who disagreed with that, knew I, when he heard I was coming, he was kind of peeved, and he told me this toward the end of the tour, and because he didn't want to have to debate Iraq with me, and because he's very pro the war there, and very sort of, and he is very jingoistic, and I said, Daryl, were you afraid that I would like, because I was co-MC, that I would introduce you as, you know, to the troops as, your president lied to you, and you are dying for no reason. Ladies and gentlemen, Daryl Worley, you know. And he laughed, and we actually just got, part of the experience of doing a USO tour, at least the ones I've done, is I've been part of a sort of a traveling troop of show folk. You feel like show folk going around. I remember we arrived at Kandahar late because our plane took off from Baghdad late. And we got there fairly late, and Daryl and I were taken in a vehicle, and there was an officer there, and he said, now, I don't know if you guys want to do a show. You got here so late, but if you just want to do a meet and greet. And Daryl and I looked at each other like, and I said to him, like, no, you don't understand. We're show folk. we're a traveling troupe of show folk. The only place we live is on the stage. You can't take that away from us. We're show folk. So part of the joy is doing the show. And I had a gas. I did, you know, I did a very kind of Bob Hope or Mighty Carson Art Players attack on the show. I did really dumb, stupid stuff, and there's a lot of sex and a lot of stuff about the military. And the USO knows that I do that. They know that I've done that in the last three tours, and they know they totally trusted me.
Well, what's your material like when you're doing? What was your material like for this latest USO tour?
Well, this was really fun. I brought Andy Breckman along. Andy Breckman is a colleague, a comedy writer, a colleague of mine who wrote on Letterman and wrote on Saturday Night Live and is the creator of Monk and the executive producer of that show. He's a very high-priced comedy writer who I brought. They had some good comedy writers. So what we did was, again, we approached this sort of like a Bob Hope show. So Andy wrote my first line was, what would happen is Carrie would come out, and Carrie Turner is an actress on JAG, a show that the guy that goes on Armed Forces Television and that the guys love. I've never seen it, but it's a very popular show on CBS in its ninth season, and Carrie is terrific, and she's a pretty blonde, and she would come out and say some very sincere thoughts of her own, and then introduced me, and I'd come out, and my first line was, "So, anybody here from out of town?" and then my next line was, "Boy, this Army chow is not agreeing with me. You know, I've had five of these MREs. Those are meals ready to eat. I've had five of these MREs, and none of them seem to have an exit strategy." And then I just do like, but it's an honor to be here with Carrie. Nine seasons on JAG. And she goes, "Well, yeah." And I said, "Well, you must have had a lot of thousands of guest hosts or guest stars on the show." And she said, "Well, yeah, we've been, not thousands, but we've had a lot. We've been very lucky." I said, "Well, I noticed that I haven't been a guest on JAG." And she said, "Well, you know, we've been very lucky." And I said, "Well, I hope maybe by the end of, now we've done this together, that I could be a guest." And she said, "Well, you know, it's a drama. It's not a comedy." And I said, "Well, actually, that's why I've taken the liberty of writing an audition piece for JAG." And then it's just a piece in which I play a visiting prosecutor who's been sent to JAG Ops by the Pentagon to shake things up, Lieutenant Lance Hardgrove. And in it, and it's just stupid. I brought it so I could
read a
little bit of it.
Good.
She goes, I give her the script. I say, "It's your line." She goes, "Lieutenant Hardgrove, what are you doing here in JAG Ops?" "I told you, Harriet. Call me Lance." They laughed at that. "Lieutenant Hardgrove, this is JAG Ops. It's all business here." "Is it? Then why are you wearing that negligee?" And then they cheered that. She says, "Al, my character would never wear a negligee in the office. You would if you were madly in love with Lieutenant Lance Hardgrove." "Al, I'm married on the show to Lieutenant Bud Roberts. I have two kids." Yeah. Keep reading. And then she reads, "Lance, I've been wearing this. I'm wearing this negligee because I want to be tonight to be very special. I want to give myself to you completely. Now kiss me." Then I kiss Carrie. I just grabbed her and kissed her. And she fights me off. And she says, "Now wait a minute, Al. You just wrote this so you could kiss me." Now they're cheering, the guys. And she says, "If I could kiss anybody, it'd be a real soldier, like one of these brave men." Now they're cheering. "Or women." "Who wants to help me out?" And then we get a volunteer. She says, "You soldier." And I'd go, "Okay, I guess we're here to entertain the troops." And then they'd read the script again, and the soldier would kiss her. And a real, you know, we wrote in the script, they kiss a long, deep kiss. And God, the guys went nuts. What I loved about this was as if each guy had kissed her. And then after the kiss, I go, wait, it's not over. There's another line." And Carrie said, "There is." I said, "Go ahead, read it to the soldier." And the soldier would read, "You know, Harriet, a woman your age really should have a thorough breast examination every year." "Lucky for you, Dr. Al Franken is here." And then Carrie, and then I'd approach her with my hands out. She'd go, "Ow, at ease." And I'd say, "Too late for that now." And she'd go, "Get out of here." You know, so that was sort of the Bob Hope thing of getting a guy on stage to kiss a pretty girl. And we had cheerleaders. Remember I told you about the last time I did a USO tour of doing the Taliban cheerleaders, and they asked
right.
me not to do it?
Yeah, you wanted to put them in
burkas.
In burkas, and the State Department, was it, said that would be insulting to, well, to people it was, in Afghanistan. Yeah,
this was October of 2001, late October 2001, and it was a general from, you know, the 3rd Air Wing or whatever in Europe who said, "Mr. Franken, we understand you have ordered 3 burkas." I said, "Yeah," and I didn't explain anything. "Yes, we're not going to tell you how to do your job, but this is a war against terrorism, not against Islam. We're trying to send that message, and we prefer that you not." Yeah, so I didn't do it then. Now they were fine, so I did this. So we got 3 tearaway burkas. And the cheerleaders and Washington Redskins. So I'd bring them out and go, "Ladies and gentlemen, we you know, no USO show is complete without cheerleaders. Unfortunately, the Washington Redskins cheerleaders missed their plane, and we're able to get a squad from in theater. And please welcome all the way from Kabul the Taliban cheerleaders." And the 3 came out in burkas, and I'd say, "Ladies, would you do a number, please?" And the leader would whisper in my ear, and I said, "You're not allowed to dance. You're not even allowed to listen to music." And she'd shake her head, and I'd say, "Well, wait a minute. We liberated you from the Taliban. What do you say, guys? Don't you want to hear a number?" And they'd cheer, and then the girls would huddle and then come back to me, and I'd say, "Well, they're going to do a number." And then I'd go hit it, and it'd be, "Everybody dance now." And then that's my "Gonna Make You Sweat" by Scenes Music Comedy. And they do this dance, and it was great. And then they were tearaway burkas, so they'd be in their uniforms, and the guys like seeing the cheerleaders more than even me.
That's amazing.
Isn't it? Considering my
speaking of length
and breadth of work.
Speaking of you, most of the soldiers are probably too young to know you from Saturday Night Live. So
that's not, well, except that
the
they
reruns,
repeat Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Reruns, right.
So actually more know me from that than I think from my satire, although a lot of them knew me from the satire. And I actually was signing my book, which I thought was kind of odd there. But I had guys come up to me, which was actually almost even more gratifying, saying, "I don't agree with you politically, but I really appreciate your coming." And then I'd say, "It's my honor." And they go, "No, it's my honor." And then I go, "No, it's my honor." And then that was a lot of my chats with these guys.
My guest is Al Franken. He did an 8-day USO tour in December, entertaining the troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. His latest book is the bestseller Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Al Franken, and he got back Christmas Eve from an 8-day USO tour, which took him to Iraq, Afghanistan, and Uzbekistan. You know, hearing you do some of the material from the USO show that you did, it's so funny. Don't you wish that it was televised the way the old Bob Hope USO tours used to be?
This could have been a very, this was a real classic, and it was partly because I had Andy along, and I had thought about this well beforehand. It was a very sort of classic variety show, and it could have been. It could have been televised, and I think, you know, Saddam had just been captured the day before we left. And so I did a Saddam piece that was actually a very sort of Mighty Carson Art Players.
Mm-hmm.
You want me to do a little bit
please,
from that?
Oh, please, yeah.
Okay, I'll do a little bit from that. So Carrie, we go, "Ladies and gentlemen, we didn't want to announce our next guest ahead of time for reasons you'll understand. He's a very special, very secret surprise, former Iraqi president Saddam Hussein." Then I'd have 2 MPs lead me up in handcuffs. And I was in full Saddam uniform that I had gotten from Saturday Night, I borrowed from Saturday Night Live with a mustache and everything. And I go, "Thank you, thank you. If they allowed me, Kerry, to carry an AK-47, I'd be firing it straight into the air right now. That's how happy I am to be here. Kerry, before you say anything, I've been thinking about it, and I've decided to let the inspectors back in." She'd say, "Well, I think it's kind of too late for that, Saddam." "Oh, I was afraid you would say that. Well, we've been looking for you, Saddam. Where have you been the last 8 months?" "Well, you know, basically in the Tikrit area, visiting family, friends, socializing." "Well, Saddam, we captured you in a tiny hole." "Oh, yes, that's true. I've been spending a lot of time in holes. I have many holes around the country. Actually, the hole you found me in, that's one of my favorite holes. It's my winter hole." your winter hole. "Oh, yes, Kerry, you should see it. It had everything. It had the air duct. I could roll over." The dirt was very nicely packed. As you know, Carrie, I used to have 20, 30 palaces, but you know how the kids had grown? You want to downsize. So, the holes. Well, I see. Anyway, I have to say, you're looking a lot better than when we first found you. Yes, you know, any mass murderer on the run, Carrie, sooner or later ends up looking a lot like Ted Kaczynski. But I've had a shave, a haircut, I've been deloused, I'm feeling great. Well, you're looking great. Well, thank you. I tell you what, Carrie, I like you so much, I'm willing to make you a deal. Here it is, one time only. I give you the weapons, you leave a rock, in exchange you and return me to power, and I can resume killing and torturing anyone I want. Take it or leave it. I don't know, what do you say, guys? And the guys would go, boo, no, no. And then she'd say, Saddam Hussein, everybody, and then they'd boo. As I left, and then I would yell at them. So as you can see, it has nothing to do with sort of the normal biting, nuanced satire that I do here.
That's really funny. Now tell me this. You know, you're on stage with like cheerleaders, and you're doing a lot of sex jokes because it's soldiers who are starved for this. Do you end up doing material that outside of a military context might seem kind of like sexist to you, and you wouldn't think of going there because it would seem so kind of like old fashioned and?
Well, I think, for example, some of the material that I've just done for you, I would never do on NPR.
I won't let you know.
That would be suicide.
That's right. I'd never.
No, it's just a different kind of humor. But you know, the women there. I mean, one out of six, I'd say, of the troops are women.
True.
And they're just. I mean, it's a bawdy atmosphere. I mean, these are young people in their 20s. We went to Tikrit at one point. They divided us up. We were supposed to do two shows in Baghdad, but the first night, there was something going on in Baghdad. We couldn't do the show there. So they flew to Baghdad, then took a Black Hawk to three different locations, six different Black Hawks. But we went to Tikrit, and it was deemed the most dangerous place we could go. So we divided this up, and I said I would go to Tikrit if they would take me to the hole.
The Saddam Hussein hole.
I want to go to the Saddam Hussein
hole. This is so you could get into character for the sketch.
No, it was so that I could get a Christmas card for next year. I wanted I wanted a picture of me in the hole with the two cheerleaders, with the Washington Redskins cheerleaders. And they said when I volunteered to go to Tikrit, and a lot of us actually went to Tikrit. Carrie went there and the Army band and the cheerleaders. So... So I said, I will go to Tikrit if I can go to the hole. And then Andy went, and my brother went. My brother was my brother is a very, very, very good photographer who's done Newsweek covers, and he's a photojournalist and Time covers. And so this was a chance for us to spend 8 days together.
Mm-hmm.
So he came along, and so we were all really, 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 and Andy wanted to go to the hole. And they kept saying, yeah, we'll try to get you to the hole. And then we'd arrive in Tikrit, and they'd say, we have heard nothing about you wanting to go to the hole. And I ran into a guy who, speaking of the State Department, who was from Coalition Provisional Authority, who was fairly high up, who said, I'll get you to the hole. And then ultimately Hickey, the guy, the commander there, nixed it, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, the only reason we wanted to go to the hole for a lark, and we're in a war.
Right.
It would have involved a convoy taking us to the hole. So there was absolutely no reason.
But absolutely worth it for your Christmas card.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know.
Well, listen, you know, you're in a really dangerous territory.
Yeah.
What were the risks like for you to do the USO tour?
Well, I have to say that I was never as afraid on the tour as I was before I left.
Mm-hmm.
Before I left, I did a lot of saying goodbye to my, you know, unnecessarily mawkish, maudlin goodbyes to my kids because I was actually genuinely believing that there was a chance I could get killed. And I guess the most danger we were in was landing in Baghdad, which we took incredibly steep and odd circular, very tight circle and very tight, steep landing. then taking off in the Black Hawk from Baghdad, and then you fly really low and really fast in these Black Hawks. And the reason you fly low is so that any of these guys with these shoulder-launched grenades or those kind of things can't get a bead on you. And in the Black Hawk, you're constantly doing, like, evasive swerving, and then every once in a while they approach a power line and just jump up, like, 100 feet, and then jump down. And a member of the Army band threw up. I was proud I didn't. And then landing into Crete was supposedly dangerous. And that was, you know, and then when we landed in the Baghdad air, on the airport, there was a lot of always like, where do we put our personal stuff? Where's our other stuff? And they go, get off the tarmac, get off the tarmac. And we had helmets and flak jackets and stuff like that. And then evidently leaving Bagram in a cargo plane, we may have been shot at. And they set off flares, which are a defensive mechanism to make missiles follow the flares instead of the plane. But that might have been just being more safe than sorry.
Al Franken will be back in the second half of the show. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with satirist Al Franken. On Christmas Eve, he returned home from an 8-day USO tour, performing for the troops in Iraq, Afghanistan, Kuwait, and Uzbekistan. It was his fourth USO tour in 5 years. Franken's latest book is Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, A Fair and Balanced Look at the Right. Were there any moments on the tour that struck you as, like, particularly surreal?
Well, there was one where we flew from Tikrit in the Black Hawk back to Baghdad. As we were getting on the helicopter, we noticed they were loading these tin containers of stuff, and it was Saddam's money that they had found somewhere. It was like $1.4 million in cash. And so they put that on our helicopter, and evidently, delivering that cash was more important than delivering us, because when we got to the Baghdad airport, they went right to the place where they were supposed to deposit the cash and dropped us off in a... This is a big airport. We didn't know where we were. So we just got off and wandered around, and we were cut off from our group, and we kind of walked into a bombed-out terminal where there were some infantry guys. So these are the guys that go out and are in danger all the time. And I remember running into a guy named Muncie. This is sort of our Apocalypse Now moment. So I ran into a guy named, you know, they've made these makeshift hooches in the terminal. And I run into this guy named, talk to this guy named Muncie, who's from Long Island. And he has kind of a real... and, you know, battle-worn look to him, and young guy, and tells me a couple weird things he's seen, a guy in his unit who killed himself. And anyway, so we just have this time to kill. There's nothing to do. So we did a show. We did for, like, 12 soldiers. We did a few. We did the Saddam piece.
Well, that's great.
And the cheerleaders did, you know, some stuff. So... yeah, and it was, and then somehow we were found. But that was sort of the most surreal thing, and.
So you were on the plane with the money?
It was on the helicopter with the money, and I tried to make...
Didn't that make you feel a little bit like a target?
I don't think anyone knew there was money there except for us.
Oh.
We also, actually, this is where the guy threw up. And so we dropped, we stopped halfway in between to, I didn't know why we were dropping, but it turned out that we were dropping off a chaplain because a guy at a small base had died. And we also emptied the helmet of the guy who threw up. And, but no, I don't think anyone knew we had this money. I tried to, as a joke, steal the money. And it was very heavy, the tins they put it in, I think deliberately. So I couldn't steal there were three tins, each with about $500,000 in it.
Next time.
I tried to make off
next
with
time.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I couldn't break into the tens either. So I don't know. I think it was American, you know, it was dollars. And it was just a drop in Saddam's bucket.
If you're just joining us, my guest is satirist Al Franken, and he just did an 8-day tour, USO tour, in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Uzbekistan. You spent a night of Hanukkah celebrating the holiday in one of Saddam's palaces. What exactly was the Hanukkah celebration in the palace like?
Well, it was in this huge palace. He has the, I mean, if you fly over this country, by the way, it's a very pretty country. And north of Baghdad, anyway, which I was flying over in a helicopter, so it was easier to see, it gets green, it gets their wetlands. Tikrit is a beautiful city. I think it's his hometown, so he dropped a lot of cash in it. And, you know, it's obscene. These palaces are obscene. The size and scope and the amount of marble and the egotism of the guy. I mean, there are these, the one in Baghdad, every pillar, these huge marble pillars, had his initials carved in them in a huge way and inlaid with gold. And so we were in the main foyer of this palace with the hugest cut glass chandelier, just unfathomably big. And there wasn't much furniture. I don't know if it was looting or if whether the military's just taking the furniture out. But we did have this huge, like, samovar or coffee maker that we put the menorah on and some ornate chair. And we just did the prayer for lighting the candles. And we did it both. It was both solemn and both a big giant FU to the guy,
mm-hmm.
who wasn't very far away. We were in this near the Baghdad airport, and that's where he's being kept. And it was kind of cool. It was kind of moving. You know, he has at one of his palaces or one of his command centers this giant mural of Scuds being sent to Israel. and destroying Israel.
Okay.
So that's like, you know, so it was me and my brother and Steve and Andy Breckman, you know, singing the prayer. And part of the leitmotif of the tour was we were with two country singers and their guitarists and their road managers and there was a wrestler named Bradshaw, who's a very well-known wrestler who is a big redneck, a self-proclaimed redneck. So there was a redneck versus Jew leitmotif to the whole tour, which was just a tremendous amount of giving each other crap. And Daryl was with us when we did Hanukkah, and he was unbelievably moved. And it was just, you know, it was cool.
You got back to New York on Christmas Eve. What was it like coming home on Christmas Eve? Having successfully completed this experience that you were really worrying about because you thought that it was possible you'd get killed.
Well, I was obviously very happy to see my family, although I found that after eight days in a war zone, I could no longer relate to them. They had not seen the horrors I had seen. No, it was... that's not true.
You're having flashbacks
mainly,
now?
I don't know. I was over-dramatizing my 8 days. We had a very nice Christmas dinner, and I slept an incredible amount. Because we were humping it the whole time. There were nights where we had like two and a half hours of sleep, and we were just doing a lot of sleeping in planes and traveling in very cramped cargo planes. And so when I got home, at one point I laid on the couch, my son put my black lab Kirby on top of me, and I just lay, and just Kirby and I just slept together for about 4 hours. So there was a lot of that. There was a lot of just me being tired, and we haven't seen you in 8 days, Dad, and you're just tired.
Al Franken, really a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
As always.
Al Franken did an 8-day USO tour in December. His latest book is the bestseller, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them.